the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Williams will roll it in. It's picked up by Perkins. 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Matthews launching a three on the right wing. That is no good. Hits in the rebound, and redemption is found in the desert. The Tar Heels have won their sixth national title. The devastation of last year turns to elation in 2017. 71-65, North Carolina, national champions.
Welcome to our post-national championship edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G here from Glendale, Arizona. I'm Andy Cats along with my co-host Seth Greenberg. That call courtesy of the Westwood One NCAA Network, and the word redemption certainly is poetic here because it is incredibly rare for a team to get to back-to-back national championship games, let alone Final Fours in this new one-and-done era that has sort of taken over college basketball and transfers. And yet, North Carolina was able to do it. They got back to the final few minutes, and this time they handled it differently. They win 71-65 over Gonzaga. A couple things to unpack here on an early Tuesday morning. Seth, let's go over with your overall impressions of the basketball game, because I can tell you, it got vilified. It was not a work of art by either team, and it's sometimes maybe the officials. What's that?
So why are you asking me my impressions? You're going to give
because
you yours
Because I value
anyway.
Yours. I value yours more than anyone else's. So I just want overall first your overall impression of the basketball game, and then we'll go each side.
The game had no flow. It really had no flow. I mean, I think that you had two teams playing incredibly hard. I thought two very good defensive teams. I thought that offensively, the teams played at times like wind-up toys with no sense of purpose. Yet, you know, there were moments where, you know, you saw some good things. I think defense was the calling card, obviously not shot making. To think that North Carolina won a game shooting what they did from the three-point line. Overall, I thought Carolina wore Gonzaga down in some ways. They dominated the game with their depth in the paint, like we talked about before the game, and by taking care of the basketball. I mean, 14-4 turnover margin. I always talk about turnover differential being an important factor in the game, and it was. And I think redemption, you know, you talk about redemption, but I think that if you look at Isaiah Hicks stepping up big after struggling, Joel Berry stepping up big after struggling, and don't underestimate the impact and the play of Theo Pinson, because he was like the Energizer Bunny, running down balls, getting to the glass, driving and making the extra pass at times. I thought he was really good, as well as Justin Jackson, who defensively in this tournament separated himself. He wasn't great offensively. He didn't shoot it well, but I thought he did a great job on Nigel Williams-Goss, very similar to what a great job he did on Dorsey, the great job he did on Monk. I thought defensively he really separated himself.
Yeah, we're going to hear shortly my post-game interviews with Mark Few and Nigel Williams-Goss, and Allison Williams was with Joel Berry and Roy Williams. And I just want to get your opinion on this, Seth, because this is what Mark Few said in that interview. He said he asked the guys essentially to out-rebound North Carolina. They did, 49-46. He said he asked them to obviously lock down on threes on them. They did. Carolina went 4 of 27. Gonzaga made 8 of 19 threes. But they left a lot of free throw points on the board, going 17-26. And as you mentioned, Roy Williams pointed this out to Allison, 4 turnovers for North Carolina. But statistically, if someone just, you know, parachuted down, didn't watch the game, and just looked at that stat line, the overall stats, shooting percentages, 3 points, free throws, how do you explain how North Carolina still won this game?
Number of shots attempted. Look at the number of shots attempted. And you have a
73 for Carolina.
Yeah, yep. How many for Gonzaga?
For Carolina. And Gonzaga, yeah. 59.
There it is. You know, it's, you know, you can shoot poorly, but if you get more shots, how do you get more shots? If you're not offensive rebounding, which actually they did a pretty good job offensive rebounding the ball, it was turnovers. You can't be minus 10 in turnover differential. I mean, that's a big, big number. And, you know, that was the difference in the game. And then, you know, just some key things down the stretch. I thought Isaiah Hicks really was good. And then you look at foul trouble. We talked about the depth and the versatility of the Gonzaga front court. I mean, Collins goes down. Karnowski's in foul trouble. Collins was the one front court player for Gonzaga that really was unaffected. I thought Carolina did a really good job on Karnowski of not letting him get to his right shoulder. Yeah, he couldn't. But they played strong on it, what I call sternum on his inside shoulder. What I mean by that is when he caught the ball on the right block as he was working to the middle, they wouldn't let his shoulders turn into the rim to shoot that jump hook. So he was always shooting it away from the basket. And that's game plan and that's personnel. And I always say in short turnaround games, it's stay true to your principles, but personnel-driven scouting reports. And that was a personnel-driven scouting report by North Carolina.
Look, the easy answer is to blame the officials since there were a ton of fouls called.
It was a poorly officiated game. It was a poorly officiated game on both sides.
All right, so you obviously think it was poorly officiated. And I thought there were a lot of different calls that were very questionable. And an out-of-bounds call, obviously, on Kennedy Meeks, that's gone viral where his hand is out of bounds that, you know, certainly could have changed direction. It was a jump ball possession to North Carolina. So, but how do you balance some of the calls that were made, the lack of flow, with the fact that these guys were banging each other constantly, and maybe that the teams also should have responsibility in how the game was officiated? How do you make the balance there?
I think the teams have some responsibility, but I think also in that, and maybe I differ from the masses, or maybe I differ. We're so into this freedom of movement that we had the best players on both teams sitting and watching. I mean, like, guys are afraid to defend, and some of the calls. And look, that's a good crew. I wouldn't say it's a great crew. I thought that was a good crew. But I think that, you know, officials can get lost in the moment and on that stage just like a player can. And, I think that's what happened. You're talking about two basketball teams with legitimate front court players. It was a different game to officiate because of the size and number of big players on the floor. And to me, my problem with the officiating is there was no consistency in the way the game was officiated. No calls became fouls. Blocks became charges. The flagrant one, in my opinion, was a basketball play that just, you know, happened to get caught up.
Yeah, that was on Karnowski. His hands coming
Karnowski
down and across
Mary's
neck. Where else is his hand supposed to go?
I mean, he's a mountain mess. I mean, look, the guy's huge. So I just think that there was no flow in the game. And look, the players have to take some responsibility. But a good official gets a feel for the game. He settles into the game no differently than a player settles into the game. I didn't think that crew ever settled into the game. And that's just me. And yet I would take any of those guys on one of my games. But, I mean, this is a different moment. And I didn't think they handled that moment all that well.
All right, so we're going to talk about a couple of these North Carolina players individually. But first, let's hear post-game. Late Monday night, Allison Williams was with North Carolina's Joel Berry, the most outstanding player, and North Carolina head coach Roy Williams.
Joel, as the clock hit zero and the confetti came down, how did it feel?
I was in tears, and just because we had worked so hard to get back to this point, and all we just had on our mind was redemption from last year. And when that confetti fell and it was on our side, you know, it was the greatest feeling in the world.
How much does this loss help heal some of the hurt and the heartbreak from losing it in the national championship game last year?
Yeah, we can forget about that now. I told somebody, you know, you're only as good as your last headline. And so, you know, when we wake up in the morning, the paper is going to say North Carolina 2017 national champions. And that's what we wanted. And we wanted to forget about last year. And I can finally say, you know, what will be replaying in my head is, you know, us just cheering, just enjoying the win and just how we just won it this time. So
it was a close game, though. And when it was a three-point game, 20-some seconds left, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, we just needed to stop. We work on that in practice, you know, being up 6 points with 3 minutes to go. And I just told the team, you know, we need to get a stop, go down and score. And at a three-minute timeout, one of our assistant coaches and Coach Williams said, we don't want that feeling that we had last year. And so we need to just go out there and give it our all. And that's what we did. And we got a stop, and we were able to score and got another stop, and then it was ours then.
You came into this weekend with two sprained ankles. You had 22 points tonight. How were you able to do that with the injury?
Yeah, when we got after warm-ups, coach just told me use my legs when I'm shooting. So every time I shot the ball, I just tried to use my legs and just think about it. And it was a lot of rehabbing, a lot of sacrificing my own time for the team, and you know, it's all worth it. And I just gave it my all, and I feel like that's the difference between, you know, me and other players, is that I have will and heart. Mm-hmm. And I just gave it all, you know. I put the pain aside and I just thought about my teammates.
I know you've spent a lot of time at night visualizing this game. How did the real thing compare to what you saw in your mind all those nights?
Yeah, it doesn't compare at all. I mean, you visualize, I mean, that's just something in your head and that you can see and that you want to happen. But when it actually happens, I mean, it's a big difference. And, you know, I just, my visualization just came true. And I'm glad I sat there and visualized it, because now, I mean, it's a dream come true now.
What are you going to do with the Nets? Where are you going
to
put them?
I'm going to give them to my mom. I got to give this all to her and to my family. They helped me through this. And when I looked in the crowd before the game and saw them write the Believe on their on the inside of their arms, I almost started crying then, just because I couldn't have done it without them. And so I'll give this right here to my mom.
Your third national championship. What makes this one special?
Well, the kids that we've worked with for the last couple of years have been sensational. We came so close last year, and it made them work extremely hard in the offseason to be the best player they could be and to get back to this. And it's amazing that we got back, because it's hard to get here. And then to finish the game out like that, it's pretty special.
I know you said you weren't talking about last year leading into this game, but how much does winning it help kind of soften the sting of the loss last year?
And to me, it doesn't soften it, because it was Marcus and Bryce and Joel, and Marcus Page made one of the most unbelievable shots anybody's ever seen. And we just wanted to get it into overtime, but Villanova came down and made a big-time play. It doesn't soften that at all, but it might make this one even more sweeter, too.
Joel Berry came into the Final Four with two sprained ankles, and he leaves as the most outstanding player. What can you say about his performance?
He's one of the toughest kids I've ever been around. His ankles are not good. And after Saturday's game, there was quite a bit of swelling. And he just did so much rehab. And Doug and Dr. Brickner and Dr. Creighton did so much work with him. But as I like to say, he's a tough little nut.
You said after the Oregon game you had to shoot better in the national championship game to win it. You didn't. You shot just 36%. So how did you guys get it done?
You know, one thing, and it's amazing because none of the people in the press asked me about it, and I didn't even say anything about it in my comments. I mean, one big thing is we had four turnovers the entire game. Somebody's got a stat sheet. I think we had 73 shots, and they only had 59. We shot the same number of free throws, I think. So we got more opportunities. I think we had four turnovers, and they had 14. Was big. And, you know, you keep throwing it up there. Every now and then it might go in.
When you were on that stage and the guys are dancing as you have after so many victories, what was going through your mind?
Oh, a lot of things. You know, you just think about how much work you've put in, how much work they've put in. You think of the players that you've coached that didn't get to that step, and it always makes me sort of melancholy, a little sad kind of thing. But I was also thinking about my mom saw me coach in the first Final Four, but she never saw any left after that, and it would have been nice for her to see us win one. Coach Smith and what he meant to me, my best friend in Chapel Hill passed away before last season. And, you know, it's been a rough ride, but nothing's sweeter than it feels right now.
Next season will be your 30th. Mm-hmm. You've won your third national championship. How much time do you take this summer to kind of sit back and assess your coaching future?
Well, I know one thing, that we can go recruiting on Thursday at 12 o'clock, and I'll be recruiting that day. And, you know, I love what I'm doing, and as long as my health is good, I don't put limits on myself. I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy being with the kids. And, I mean, I was chewing them out at halftime and in one time out, because they've got to accept the coaching more. But yet in a big game like this, sometimes their emotions get the best of them.
All right, Seth, so let's first talk about Joel Berry II. He was hobbling this week and didn't practice on Sunday, had bad ankles. If he does not play well, they don't win this game. They don't win the national championship. 22 points, 4-13 on threes, and timely shots when he made them. 6 assists and only 1 turnover. Assess the game that Berry had despite being hampered going into it.
Well, if he doesn't make a jump shot, I'm not sure Carolina made a jump shot. But I thought it's the shots that he got. I mean,
he was the only one making threes.
Joel Berry, exactly. He's the guy that can make a step in three or a rhythm three off the bounce. What I mean by the rhythm three is where he puts it in his left hand, he freezes the defender for a second, jumps up, and shoots the basketball. And step in threes are on ball reversal or inside out. And, you know, Theo Pinson made a huge pass to him on a quick ball reversal where he drove it and came to a stop. They drove and came to a stop. The first pass went to Pinson. As a coach, you always say one more on dribble penetration and when the ball comes out of the post. He made that one more pass. Berry knocks down the three. I thought he showed great toughness. I liked what Roy Williams did playing him off the ball defensively. It took some pressure off his ankles. Joel Berry was the leader. And I say this all the time, never underestimate leadership. He had a determination with him that his team followed. And you're really happy for a kid like that. He showed tremendous toughness.
Justin Jackson goes 0-for-9 on threes. It seemed like at times he was really forcing it, but at the same time they did a great job defensively. But it's all about when you score. He had a huge Mark Few discuss this coming up here. You'll hear from him. Just an unbelievable offensive rebound, three-point play type move that clearly could have been a difference if we look back at this basketball game. How would you describe Jackson's night?
Yeah, it's not just making jump shots and missing jumpers. He had the huge offensive rebound. Then he had a really good play where he read the defense overplaying him, coming off a baseline screen, back cut it, caught it, and finished it. Those were two big basketball plays, for Jackson. So, you know, I was really impressed with just, you know, when you're struggling offensively, it can impact what you're doing defensively. And it didn't. He compartmentalized both sides of the floor. He compartmentalized, even though he wasn't knocking on jumpers, he was running the floor, he was rebounding the ball. And to me, he showed a maturity about his game. You can't let your offense impact your defense, and he didn't, which is really impressive.
All right, before we move on to Roy Williams real quick, a little stay or go. Joel Berry, stays or goes?
Stays. Where's he going?
I'm just making sure. You never know these guys. Justin Jackson.
I think he's gone. I actually think he should stay, especially with this year's draft. And, look, he was, you know, ACC Player of the Year. And the jump he made this past year, if he stays, imagine the jump he can make a year from now. It'll be a tough decision, but I would think he would go, but I would love to see him stay. But you can't begrudge him. He'll probably be at the end of the lottery or a little bit later, my gut feeling.
Tony Bradley.
He stays. He could go. I think his upside's incredible. His stamina isn't very good, but his ability to run the floor, get to the offensive glass, at times he looked a little bit lost, but instinctively, he does some really impressive things, but I think he stays.
Roy Williams wins his third national championship. He passes his mentor, the late, great Hall of Famer Dean Smith. 3 national championships. What's his legacy?
He's in rarefied air. I mean, think of 3 national championships, 9 Final Fours. He wins with different type of teams, and I think that's the thing. He's best with more veteran teams, but, I mean, what he's been able to accomplish and the consistency in what they do and the connection he has with his players. But, I mean, he's in rare air. I mean, he's already a Hall of Famer. I mean, how much rare air can you be in? Your legacy. I mean, once you make the Hall of Fame, I think your legacy is pretty much cemented. What it does is that, when you look at Roy Williams now, if he stays, and you know that's a question as well, but if he stays, we've always talked about what's your hook. Cal's hook is one and done. As you go, Coach K's hook is the Olympics. Now all of a sudden, Roy Williams' hook is, wait, hey, I got three national championships, nine Final Fours, North Carolina, and we develop our players and we won with players that have committed to the Carolina way per se. So, I mean, look, his legacy, I don't know how anyone can question his legacy, Mark Few's legacy. I mean, you know, Mark Few will be a Hall of Famer. Roy Williams is a Hall of Famer. And when you win two national championships, you know, your legacy is pretty much cemented. A third puts you in rare company.
And as Roy told Allison Williams, he's getting ready to recruit as soon as he can here in the month of April. So he wants to keep grinding and said as long as his health is good, he's going to keep going. All right, let's shift to Gonzaga. Before we talk about some of these individual players, I want you to hear my post-game interview with Nigel Williams-Goss and Mark Few and really listen to the emotion, raw emotion from Nigel Williams-Goss.
Nigel, you guys had so many chances to take the lead, potentially win this game. How do you rationalize the way it ended?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's tough when you feel like you had plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities to make plays, to win a game. You know, it's just kind of like one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, and it hurts because, you know, you might not get this opportunity again. So you got to give Carolina a lot of credit. They played hard. They played tough. Both teams battled, but it does sting when you didn't capitalize on those opportunities.
You say it hurt. You've obviously been tearing up a little. How do you describe the pain that you're feeling right now?
You know, it's tough. It's tough when you feel like if you're at your best tonight that you win the game, you know, and I wasn't at my best tonight. And, you know, I think same goes for, you know, a lot of other players on this team. None of us feel like we played our best, and that's tough to swallow. But, you know, we can hang our hats on the fact that we know we put in the work, and tonight just wasn't our night, which is tough.
You hurt your ankle right toward the end. There's a timeout. And then you came back in. Your shot was a little bit short. How much did it affect you?
Yeah, I sprained it pretty good. You know, and I'm not going to lie. It did hurt, but I missed some easy shots all game. Credit, you know, to Carolina. They did make some good defensive plays at times, and then there were times where I just missed some shots that I normally make. So, you know, it only happened the last, you know, minute, and I was able to get through it, and it just hurts.
You got this program to the national championship game within a couple possessions of winning it. What have you and these players, you think, meant to Gonzaga and the Spokane community?
I think we've meant a lot, you know, and I just think just seeing all the smiles on people's faces that we've put on them, I feel like we made our city proud, made our school proud, but it just hurts that we weren't able to finish the deal. But I'm glad I was able to be part of the first team in history to get us to the Final Four, and it just leaves the door open for the next group of Zags to come in here and close the deal.
Well, congratulations on a great season.
Thank you so much.
Mark, you guys were right there within a possession or two of either tying or winning this basketball game for the national championship. How do you deal with the fact that you were so close?
I'm not sure I can answer that right now, 15 minutes after the game. You know, it's a crushing blow right now, but I'm fairly certain perspective will be gained here in, you know, a day or a couple days or weeks or months of just what an amazing year we had and amazing run we had. I think what this group accomplished, we were dealing with kind of a stale attitude towards the Zags in the basketball community from, you know, supporters and people, media, and I think we ignited that back to where they look at us as national champion caliber and as they should, and these guys deserve all the credit for that. So I'm hoping that'll be the perspective that we eventually get to. But, you know, to be so close and not be able to get over the hump will be something that probably takes a little bit of time to get over.
When you look back at this game, Zach Collins fouls out with 5 minutes left. Shema Karnowski in foul trouble. What did you see?
Jonathan Williams was in foul. I mean, we were in massive foul trouble. I mean, we've never had that all year. But again, that's, you know, it was two heavyweights going at it. It was their bigs and our bigs, and they were in foul trouble. We were in foul trouble, and I thought we did a great job of navigating our way and kind of negotiating our way, you know, to get it down to you know, where we take the lead with a minute or so to go. We just didn't the Jackson cut, and I haven't seen it yet, where he got an and one. That was tough, and then we get a stop on that last play, and I mean, evidently his hand was out of bounds, but we just didn't come up with a clean rebound, and that was it.
for the most part, you did a good job on Justin Jackson, but maybe not Joel Berry. Why was he hard to find?
Well, I mean, Berry got 22 on 19 shots. So, and again, great players. But, you know, we had to start doubling the post because of this foul trouble we were in. We could not afford any more fouls. So we doubled the post, and Caroline did a great job of executing, making the one more pass. They found Berry a couple times after our double to knock down threes. So, you know, you got to pick your poison when you double the post. And, you know, that's what we usually do to people is throw out and hit threes. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. The Carolina deserves a lot of credit for having a plan. But, you know, Andy, I mean, I asked these guys, and that's why they've been so amazing all year. I asked them to out-rebound Carolina. That's what we had to do to win the game, to out-rebound them. I asked them to drive their three-point percentages down. We drove their three-point percentage, I think it was like 14%. You know, we just didn't deliver on the offensive end. We their size and their physicality, I think, bothered us, and we missed a couple bunnies. I mean, a little short one-footer, two-footers. We left some points on the free-throw line. Some of our good free-throw shooters missed, so I think that's probably what stings the most is we were right there. But Carolina's a worthy champion, man. They that's the first time I think we've been outshot in like 45 games, field goal percentage-wise. So it was tough generating hoops. Their defense was the real deal. Tonight it was kind of a struggle to score all night. And ironically, their defense is what won this thing, not ours.
Nigel Williams-Goss was in here, and, I mean, tears streaming down his face. When you went into the locker room, how would you describe that raw emotion from your players?
It was as devastating as you could imagine to them, and obviously to somebody like Nigel who just lays it all out on the line. I mean, the guy is the ultimate competitor and really the ultimate winner, and we were riding him hard there at the end. I mean, he blew, you know, turned his ankle bad there with a, you know, minute and a half or so to go, and didn't want to come out. And we even, you know, called his number the last two times again because he was – that's where we were having all our success down the stretch. So I think what's hard for him right now is he's such a winner that, you know, losing drives him nuts and being so close to a national championship. But I just told him we never would have ever even been close to this without him. Either this whole journey, we never would have been close to a Final Four or negotiating our way to through the tournament, or this game. I mean, he strapped us on for stretches in this game. So I think some perspective will come to him soon, too. It's just not here right now.
And finally, if you can put in perspective what this has meant to you. I mean, all the Zags came back, the players, your good friends, the former staff. Yeah. I mean, you really brought everyone here to Arizona. What does that mean to you?
Oh, man, I can't tell you how many times I've just been moved, you know, to emotionally this entire week. It's been unbelievable. Domus and Alenik showed up today. They got like 18 hours off, and they flew in. We had, I don't know, probably 100 players come up, and were able to be with them and get them up with our guys. My college roommate, the Olympic pole vaulter, flew in Friday from Monte Carlo. I mean, are you kidding me? From Monte Carlo, he's here. So, and to have, you know, Billy and Leon and Ray and Munns and Turge and Tad Boyle and all those guys, Billy Walker here with me. I mean, that moved me also. So it was an awesome, awesome week. And I think we did as good a job. Everybody kept telling me to enjoy it. I think we truly enjoyed it and savored it. But, I mean, that didn't affect our performance, man. My guys fought and they competed in this thing. And we were just right there. I mean, I think that's what's going to sting forever is being so close to a national championship and not getting it done.
Congratulations on a great year, Mark.
Yep, thanks.
Seth, Nigel Williams-Goss tells me that, you know, his ankle really bothered him. And it did affect that last shot that he was trying to take. You know, you kind of wonder, he'd been so good for them for so long, winner in every sense of the way. They're not there without him. You know, did he try to do too much? He clearly wasn't right because he tweaked his ankle there right before that possession. They take a timeout. He comes out, and he's the one taking the shot. You hear his emotion. You see it. How would you describe kind of the game that he had and whether or not maybe he should have deferred on that last shot?
Despite his shooting, I thought his floor game was pretty good. I thought that especially in the first half, Mark did a great job when Carolina went with that smaller lineup of isolating him, giving him a chance to back people down. The defense came to help. He dumped it off. Who else are you going to give the ball to? It's not like they have a ton of guys that can go get a shot. They could have played through the post, but he came off of that ball screen, and he tried to make a tough shot. But that's the guy who got him there. That's the guy at the end of the game that they learned after BYU who had to have the basketball. So I don't begrudge him. I mean, he's trying to make a play. I mean, I think we get overly critical. And then you say, wait a second. So what else are you going to do in that moment in time? Who else are you going to give a chance to make that play? And you know what? Meeks made a great play. Give him credit. I'm not sure he had a dump off. And, you know, I don't think there's another guy on that team. As you go down their whole roster, you know, Perkins struggled in the second half. We know Jordan Matthews plays off penetration. The only other thing you could have done is tried to post the ball quickly and then played out of that. But Kornowski had struggled. So I don't begrudge him at all. I'm a huge Nigel Williams-Goss fan.
Look, we can debate, you know, for hours, if people want to go about should they be paid and this and that, and they're really pros and all this kind of stuff. What I saw last night, I mean, that was a young man with real raw emotion. I think sometimes we all forget with 77,000 people there that, and I'm not saying they're kids, but I'm saying they are young adults. And you sometimes get detached by, you know, how emotional this moment can be, because unlike the pros, this clearly could be the only time in your life you will be in this position.
Yeah, and we saw it with the Kentucky kids, the Aaron Fox,
yep,
and Bam Adebayo. I mean, this isn't, you know, people understand the amount of investment these kids have in this moment.
For years.
And the shared experience and living a dream. And, you know, you can debate all you want about the amateurism and, you know, all that stuff. And you know what? That's really for another day. But you can see that how important this type of thing is for them because of that shared experience. And they're not sitting there acting like, oh, you know, I've gone to bed hungry or I'm not getting. No, that wasn't what his emotion was all about. His emotion was all about that experience he's had the last 2 days, decided 2 years, going to Gonzaga, you know, developing as a person, developing as a leader, being part of something, and not getting so close and not being able to help his team get there. So we've seen it throughout the tournament, and that's the underappreciated thing about, you know, college athletics that I think we don't see, because these kids have an incredible experience, a lifetime experience, and you know, in a lot of ways, this is their interview. And not, I'm talking about NBA interview, but this is their interview in life. And this is the snapshot that people are going to have of them. And you know what? There aren't a lot of doors that wouldn't be open for Nigel Williams-Goss as you watched him yesterday or throughout his career at Gonzaga the last 2 years.
You still think he's going to go?
I think he's gone. He sounded to me like he was gone.
No, I know.
In the interview with you.
Yeah, yeah. Two other quick players before I just want a general Gonzaga comment from you. Zach Collins, as excited as everyone was, Saturday night, gone, lottery, the whole thing. You know, he got in foul trouble, whether you like all the calls or not. He got in foul trouble, wasn't able to be as effective because he wasn't able to stay on the floor. He still had 9.7 boards in 14 minutes. What do you think he does?
I think he's going to stay. I just have a gut feeling. I think he was really poised and patient this whole weekend, catching the ball, establishing himself, reading the defense, good hands, really good finisher. But my gut feeling, I don't know these kids. I don't know their families. I don't know their feel for the experience. But, you know, I just have a gut that he's going to stay.
Shemek Karnowski, Europe or the NBA?
I think he'll play in the NBA. I think he'll have a roster spot in the NBA. He runs better than you think. He didn't finish yesterday. He didn't have much left. He looked tired. But I think he's going to play in the NBA. He's such a good passer. If you double him and you put him in rotation, I think he can make that next pass. I've said a long time ago, he reminds me of Arvydas Sabonis. Obviously, Sabonis in his prime, I never saw, but I saw him when he played for the Trailblazers. Is that big body that can really pass it.
And Gonzaga, what an unbelievable run they've had this season, the last 17 years. You can go back further than that. They get to the national championship game within moments of potentially pulling off the national championship. But what do you think this run means to the program and to Mark Few?
Again, to Mark Few, getting to the Final Four is an incredible accomplishment. Getting to the championship game is unbelievable. It doesn't change my opinion of Gonzaga or Mark Few. I know, look, getting to the Final Four is another box to check off, but the consistency of their program, and when I say program, I mean program, all-inclusive. I had a chance to speak to Turioff this weekend. I had a chance to speak to Dickow. I've had a chance to visit with Dan Monson. This program is about, people talk about brotherhood and family and all those things. This program is about brotherhood and family. This program is about a shared commitment and experience. And I'm not just talking about the current players, but of all the players. And, Dick, I was telling a story yesterday in our game day show about how they came in right before the team was going to go and watch film on Sunday night, and the current players gave the former players, who in mass, about 70 or 80 of them, a standing ovation. Because it's about the program. It's about the past that's enabled these guys in the present to do what they're doing. So I don't think they're going anywhere. Will they get back to the Final Four? Who knows? Mark Few is Calipari-ian. He's ahead of the curve. He was the first to recruit internationally, one of the first. He was one of the first to accept transfers and fifth-year transfers to keep his team old. And Mark Few's going to find a way, is my gut feeling.
All right, when we come back here on Courtside, we're going to discuss one of the highest-profile names that got a job here in the offseason. It happened on Monday afternoon at Georgetown. Welcome back to Courtside with Katz and Coach G and Seth. On Monday, hours before the national championship game, Georgetown made it official, and they announced that Patrick Ewing, their most famous alum on the basketball court, is going to be the new head basketball coach, replacing John Thompson III. He played for John Thompson Jr. What are your initial thoughts of Ewing being the head coach at Georgetown?
I don't think Patrick will have any difficulty in the coaching aspect of the game. Look, think about the people he played for. Think about the UB Browns, and I think Mike Fratello and Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy, and he's got a great basketball pedigree. Coach Thompson. All right, here's the big question: it's not the X's and O's; it's the business of college basketball is so different than the business of the NBA. So I really believe that Pat Ewing will need a very strong, vocal assistant coach to help him navigate the business of college basketball. He's going to need a voice that he not only listens to, but hears. So when he loses a tough game and he has to go recruiting and doesn't feel like going recruiting, that person goes, Pat, hey, we got to go. And when he doesn't feel like making that phone call, and when he doesn't feel like texting a kid, and when he doesn't feel like going cross campus to meet with the admissions office or to go to an alumni function or to spend 14 straight days, or the month of July on the road recruiting, then come back and running practice in that July period. All the things, the day-to-day grind, he's going to need to say, Coach, we've got to do this. And he can't question that. And in the NBA, you can get away from it because you're coaching your team, you're mentoring your players, but you also have a chance to get away. College basketball today is basically 24 hours a day, you're on call. You're working 7 days a week, 12 months a year. there's very little you time. So when the enthusiasm is where it is right now and the excitement and the uniqueness, that's one thing. But it's the day-to-day grind of the John Calipari's, of the Coach K's, of the Bill Self's, of the Mark Few's, of the Roy Williams, of the Bobby Huggins. Will he be willing to do that? Not this year, but for the long haul. I think that's the big question.
So a couple of very key points. First of all, I think you have to credit Patrick Ewing that he went and was an assistant. 15 years learning, as you said, from some of the best minds in the game. Not just some, you know, pro guy who wants to go back to his alma mater and didn't actually do assistant coaching work. So he's worked his way up, albeit in the NBA, and there was a different transition to college. So you got to give him a lot of credit there. I also think it's a great bridge to the past, someone who knows John Thompson Jr., but also has credibility with him and, you know, has respect from Big John. So as this transition, you know, goes to under Ewing's name, you know, he can talk to him and maybe he's not intimidated by him. And can work with him. And then also, I think it's critical, money. A lot of money that's gone into this program recently has come from those NBA Hoya alums. That money will continue to flow because Patrick Ewing is the head coach at Georgetown. All right, Seth, that'll wrap up this post-national championship game edition of Courtside with Katz and Coach G. On Friday, you'll be in L.A. for the Wendy's Wooden Award ceremony. And throughout the course of the offseason, we'll be continuing to check in. We've got a lot to discuss, obviously, as players declare for the NBA draft. And then we've got the NBA draft combine in May. Decisions right after that, about a week or so to withdraw. That'll affect a lot of different rosters. There's going to be transfers. Maybe there's a little bit more coaching carousel. You never know in terms of NBA coaching jobs that could pop, whether or not they deep down and reach into the college ranks. So still a lot to discuss in the offseason. So much has been unpacked and discussed throughout the course of this NCAA tournament and the regular season. I want to thank Josh. Thank you, Josh, for all your hard work on our podcast. And we hope you've enjoyed listening throughout the course of this season and continue to listen during the postseason. You can find our podcast on the ESPN app. Click on the headphone icon. Go right to it. Of course, you can find it wherever you get your podcast on the iTunes. Subscribe to it. Like us and everything else that you do with podcasts, whether you're walking, jogging, just driving in the car. You can check out Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. You can check on me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.